Session number 13560, reel number 3.
Mr. Doughty, reel 3. You were telling me about your father's material losses from his home in the First World War.
Yes, well, he, at the end of the war, he'd lost everything, and naturally, with his father being a master craftsman in wood, he had some very nice things like china cabinets and bureaus and that, and the whole lot were destroyed, and there was no insurance. He was getting a shilling a day. They wanted him to get a commission, but I think that as a mature age, he realized that the people with commissions didn't live more than 6 weeks in some cases. And it wasn't that he was awkward about it. He didn't feel that that he wanted to do anything but what was necessary in the ranks, you see. And it's very strange. And I once remember saying to him, "Were you in a bayonet charge?" And he changed the conversation very quickly. So I think he had a pretty grim time. But when he came back, the awful thing was that they'd sold the factory and the office and everything, and he hadn't any work to do, and he was unemployed after all that time and losing everything. And it was possibly on that basis that his father suggested I went to Heimers.
You were going to tell me a story about a French submarine in the First World War.
Yes, on the Zeppelin thing, yes. It was very funny. I used to read a lot, and I could mention something that would justify the question of the Bomber Harris theory. First of all, I'll tell you about the submarine. I used to read a lot in the library, and it said that the Zeppelins were very had a feeling of great safety when they went across to the other side and took the time to park on the mast, you know, like they did at Howden and that. And it said that the French had strangely designed a submarine with a whacking great 15-inch gun on it, you see. It was a cumbersome thing, and it wasn't really suitable for the purpose intended. The idea was it would come up and there'd be nothing about. It could sink things miles away and never be in trouble itself. And it didn't have much action, but it happened to come up somewhere off the Dutch coast just as a Zeppelin was coming down. And with its terrific range, they managed to get the elevation right. And you feel sorry for the Germans, but from miles away, a shell came, went straight into the Zeppelin. And apart from being most surprised, I think most of them were killed at the time. And another memo was the fact that when we were bombed, there was a book in the library, I have no recollection of the title, but it was something like Raiders Over England by Count von Blank. And this man was a friend of Count von Zeppelin. And as far as I can gather, he was a spy because he worked in the Argo Shipping Company, which is in the street at the back of the Cenotaph. And from there he knew the whole geographical area of Hull, and there weren't any places of any particular interest, I wouldn't think, because we weren't making aeroplanes at Brough then, were we, or anything. But he knew where the shipping was, and possibly one or two factories that might be on armaments. And he was piloting the Zeppelin that bombed on the night my mother was injured. And he came down the river, which you could easily see, and there was a train coming in from London. And this train wasn't allowed to pass either Hawthorne Avenue or St. George's Road crossings. He was instructed to cover his furnace with a tarpaulin or douse his lights. And this count described how he saw the engine go under the canopy of Paragon Station. And so to justify our friend Harris, he's let go all his bombs in the middle of Hull, round the canopy of Paragon Station, which was just haphazard bombing of towns, in my view. And he didn't realise he was in, that he'd been stopped at the suburbs and the engine and lights had gone out, and he threw the bombs out, and that was why my mother was injured. And there were a lot of, there was an aerial torpedo, which was a minor consequence, dropped on the house next door, actually. And they were at the front, and it didn't explode to the extent of this bomb of ours. And quite a lot of bombs were dropped in that area, you see, in the other avenues, Delapole Avenue places, you see. And it confirmed what I knew, that he had thought he was in the centre of the town.
Did you, in the First World War, come across this passing of white feathers or pressure put by women for men to join up?
Yes, I heard people talk about the white feather, yes. And, yes, I think some men were given white feathers. I was too young to know much about it, but I did hear it discussed. I was having a drink with old Sid once, and I asked him about how he liked his work. And
this is Sid Walker.
Sid Walker, yes, and how I'd met so many people who I respected. Like they were very much like the pack of rugby league forwards. They had this determination about them, these seagoing men, you know. You notice it with them. You have to admire them. And he was telling me he'd get off, and he had a nice wife. He'd give three-quarters of his money to his wife, who would look after it. She had good money. And he'd clear off to Liverpool and see the Grand National, and he would take two friends, you see. And they were all away from Hull, and he was later than they were. And they got off Bear Island, and he had the instinct to know that it was there were conditions that would bring black ice, and he was hanging back. He thought he might go back, in fact. And he got a call from a friend asking if he was there, and he said he was in real trouble, and black ice there. And I think they either put steam on the forecastle or oil, and they couldn't do anything about it in this particular day. It was so intense, you see. And then his other friend came on and said he could, he was in trouble there, said, you see. And well, to be brief about it, both of them could never do anything. They couldn't turn, and both disappeared. And the last thing they said was, look after, you know, naming Doris. And so I said to Sid, I suppose you did. And he didn't answer, but he's the type of man who would. And I just mentioned that to show how people don't realise the tremendous risks they took in carrying out the job, in bringing fish to this country.
Was that in the First World War?
No, this was when we opened Laundrettes in 49. He'd been on boom defence work in a trawler and won the DSO, actually.
Going back to the Zeppelin bomb that damaged your mother's leg, were you injured?
No, luckily I wasn't. If the shrapnel had hit me, it would have taken my leg off. But the blast actually hit the wall as I went into the narrower hall, and my right side of my face, I was subsequently found to be deaf. But in youth, it's astonishing how the other ear makes up for this, and I went for some time without saying much about it, and then there wasn't much hope in those days, and subsequently, some 60 years later, I had the operation, which certainly made some improvement, but as I said, I got Bell's palsy as I came out of the hospital, and the operation is not an easy one. There's some danger attached to it. You lose your sense of balance. It's a wonderful thing when they take the bandages off after about 10 days and you can hear a blackbird singing, but with age it goes off and you have to use certain inhalants, and there's an oil you can get to lubricate the ear when you're becoming a bit wizened, possibly. But I managed to get by, and it's a complaint in this part of the country that with the atmosphere, even doctors have periods when they can't hear too well.
Was the Bell's palsy a result of being in hospital for the ear operation?
Pardon?
The Bell's palsy that you got, was it a result of the being in a hospital?
Oh, yes, I'm sure, because the surgeon said, here, take these, and my doctor said, take these, and he said you might have had, your right ear, it might have been your left big toe, and I said, look, all I'm saying is that I started shaving and my eyes got the soap and I realized something was happening and my mouth went out like this, and I said, I'm not going to take any drugs. I've always been fit and played a lot of football.
Yes.
And I just want to get fresh air, walking and good food. And it took me a year in the snows of North Yorkshire and the lovely country there, and down in Cornwall on the beach day after day, and walking with my wife and walking in the sea, and it was amazing, the difference.